Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Chris Castillo. She's the founder of Empowered Achievers. And if you're wondering why she's on the show, she's not a salesperson. She was actually a shout out from episode 117 with Caitlin Buckheit, where we were talking about mindset. And today we're going to dive a little bit deeper because Caitlin sort of alluded at some things. She provided some really great tactics for sort of managing people and helping work on their career. So if you're interested in that, definitely go check that one out. Today we're going to dive a little bit deeper into mindset, into how some of the beliefs are formed and sort of what you can do about them. And so with that said, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Great to have you. I'm excited. This is anytime we can talk about mindset, it's on the show, I'm super excited. I was having a call with our product manager. He does more than product management, so I don't know what to call him anymore. But basically, he came from product management, and now he does a whole bunch of other things for the company. And he was having a conversation with a customer, and he was talking about, okay, well, you know, they've came at me with this objection. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, going into the call, right? Because he's like, well, their objection. I think of him like sort of like Spock from Star Trek. Right? He's super logical. And so the customer had given him a very logical argument. So we had to sort of like shift things around. And I remember saying, like, if you go in with this mindset that you believe that they're right, then it's not going to be a productive mm-hmm. conversation at all. I was mm-hmm. like, here's the way that we sort of see things. And this is how you can adopt that. And he's like, and we sort of talked about it for 20 minutes and he's all of a sudden it went click. He's like, okay, now I get it. Now I can sort of see that perspective. Yep. And it was like, it's just if he had gone into that call with the mindset of, okay, I believe the customer, there's no script or anything that I could give him that's going to get him to be able to convince that customer to sort of come in our direction. And so we had to work on the mindset first in order to actually like make him effective on that call. And basically we said, it's like, once you've got the right mindset, that's 80% of the battle. It doesn't matter the words you use. As long as you believe this frame, then you're going to have, like, it doesn't matter the tactical, like the actual language you mm-hmm. use, you're going to do a much better job. And I think it's totally. So similar in sales, whether you're prospecting or trying to close, if you've got a positive mindset, if you're able to sort of cultivate that, as opposed to getting on the phone, cold calling, like I did in the early days where you've got maybe not everybody did, but I was given a business phone book in the early days and said, okay, go hit the phones. And yeah. Like, great. I wasn't excited about it. I wasn't happy about it. I didn't think any success was going to come out of it. And you know what? I was right.
You were right. Yeah. Like, and that's how it tends to happen.
I proved myself right. Uh-huh. Look how smart I am.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Self-preservation is an amazing thing.
So tell me about that. Like, why would I be feeling like, okay, like how is that served? Like, how did I get that belief that like, I'm going to be making this cold call and nothing's coming out of it?
Well, I think it's interesting because mindset, right, is one of those things, to your point, is like, in my perspective, the ultimate mind hack, right? Once you start to understand mindset and how the things you think drive the results you get, so much more becomes clear. And I think it's really important, first and foremost, just to understand when we talk about mindset as a whole, it's not magic, right? We're not saying that I believe that this thing is going to happen, and so then poof, it happens, right? You're not a magician. This is not what we're talking about. But what is really important to understand, just from like a more science-based approach, even if you think about it very logically, right? The things that I believe drives the actions that I take, in turn, drive my results. And so if I go on the call thinking, you know, same thing on a call, I work with clients, you know, if they're going into an interview, same kind of approach. If you go in and you're like, oh, you know, hi, and you can tell you don't feel great about it, that shows up because maybe whether it's an interview or on a call, your posturing or the way you present yourself or the wording that you use is very, right, soft.
And it's telling.
Exactly. And someone's going to be able to read that because generally people are pretty perceptive. And in turn, that's probably going to drive the results. So that's why this happens, by the way, not that it's a magical thing, but to your question about how exactly does this happen and how did I get those beliefs, you know, I always say that your brain is like a balance sheet. And if you have a lot of proof that something is true, you will believe it to be true. And that's how beliefs are formed. So like at a high level, right, I want you to think about this idea that, you know, I use the Santa example often, right? As you're a little, if you're a little kid,
And hey, spoiler alert. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
If there's any children listening.
Yeah. Those ambitious children listening to this podcast, I would be very impressed. But if they are, maybe put a mute on it for a couple
minutes. Just skip like a couple minutes.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, when it comes to the Santa whole concept, right? When you're told that Santa is true as a child, then you start to see proof that underlines this thing that you already believe. So, oh, well, my cookies are disappearing. So, like, obviously, that is one thing that goes on my proof list. Well, I left out carrots. Those are also gone. Or whatever it is, something showing up at the end of my chimney. There we go. Right. Whatever it is that's kind of the process, is we hear something, typically when we're quite young. And then over time, we accrue proof that tells us that this is true. And so then we start to assume it's true. So to the kind of shortened version, or my best attempt at a shortened version for your question, that's what I would say is really, you probably heard it somewhere and then you started to have experiences that told you that that was true and you started to believe it.
So you're saying I sucked at cold calling. This is your like long-winded way of just—
No, I'm saying you believed you sucked at cold calling. Yeah, that's the problem.
That's fair. And you know what? In the very beginning, I probably did. But to your point, it probably wasn't like having that mindset wasn't doing me any favors and was probably just sort of creating this loop where it's like, well, I think I suck at cold calling. And then I go and I suck at cold calling. So I just like prove that I'm right.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem, is no belief in my mind is, for the most part, generalizing here, most things aren't inherently bad, right? But the problem becomes when you have proof for a certain belief. And so you, in your kind of twisted math, say, well, because that's sometimes the case, that means it's the case 100% of the time. Mm-hmm. And that's where the issue lies, right? That's the kind of discrepancy we're looking at here, is when someone goes from saying, oh, well, sometimes my calls don't go super well, to saying, well, I just suck at cold calling and I'm bad at it.
For sure.
Right. That's the problem. And that's the you know, incorrect math that I often see happening with people is, I'm like, yeah, you can say sometimes that's the case, but is that the case 100% of the time? And we tend to think of things in black and white truths and in absolutes, which is not necessarily advantageous to us. And so that's where this problem comes, is when you start to say all of the time this is true, then that's when these become more problematic. And that's what we tend to do as humans, unfortunately.
That's fair. And I think, as you know, if I look back at this example and I unpack that, like I've helped companies with, like, I've helped just people in general run sort of thousands of like marketing, like not marketing campaigns, sales campaigns, written messaging, cold call, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If I look back at that example of call, like shitty calling in that crappy phone book, that it wasn't a failure, necessarily an individual failure, right? It was a systems, it was a company failure of, it was, you know, we'll leave out like right or wrong person, right? But let's mm-hmm. say a junior person who is left to come up with their own strategy, wasn't given any coaching, right? Wasn't given any sort of sales materials and was just said phone book and go, right? Which you've, in this case, you've set this individual up to fail.
Yeah, you're not setting them up for success. Yeah.
And so I've taken all these factors and I've internalized it and said, okay, well, mm-hmm. I just suck at cold calling because I couldn't be successful here. And not realizing that there are other companies that would do it differently, that would say, okay, we're going to put you, you know, 2 weeks shadowing, and then you're going to have this and you're going to have that, and then you're going to have all this material.
Yeah.
And like, had I had that, it would have cultivated a much more positive outlook of myself and how I felt about cold calling and my abilities. But it's tough to sort of zoom out and see that, especially when you're so into the weeds.
100%. And that's the problem, right? Is as humans, we tend to be pretty harsh on ourselves. I used to work in advertising. I used to always be the person who expected a lot of myself. That's also who all my clients tend to be. So I know this pattern very well of this, oh, well, this one thing didn't go well, so it must be on me. And yet the same, you know, the math never works both ways, right? You're willing to take all the blame, but you're never willing to take all the praise. It's a very interesting thing. But yeah, the ego is interesting like that, right? It's, you almost think that as a self-preservation tactic, well, if I just, you know, say that I'm bad at it or it's my fault before that, then no one else can tell me that. So that's going to hurt less, right?
And it also hurts less when you do fail. If you come into it with like knowing that I suck at cold calling and then I go in and I prove, it's not like, see, I thought I was good and I failed. It's like, I knew I was going to do a bad job and I did a bad job. See, I was right about me being terrible.
100%. You are preserving your rightness. And this is very much something, you know, tied to this idea about, right, either Carol Dweck. So Carol Dweck wrote the book Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. And she talked about growth versus fixed mindset. And we can spend a lot of time on that. But this whole concept come back to the idea of why people even have, you know, why people even believe these things in the first place is why people tend to go to a more fixed mindset, or why people tend to go to this mindset that there's a certain amount of ability and, you know, here's where I lie, is not because they want to, or not because they want to be harsh on themselves, but it's just because it's a lot easier and more comfortable to think that you know exactly where you stand. So you can say, well, I'm just, you know, I've just never been the person who's good at math like that. So it's not, you know, it's not a problem. It's just what is. It's a very interesting approach.
And that's the, like, to summarize, if people haven't read the book, yes, basically she says there's two mindsets, and the fixed mindset is a type of person that believes that they were born with a certain set of skills and those skills are fixed.
Yes.
Right. So I was born able to, you know, talk to anybody. And so therefore I'm innately going to be great at sales, and yep, nothing that I do can really change that other than sort of hone these skills I already had.
Yes.
Whereas the growth mindset is sort of the opposite. And it says you're born with a certain set of skills, but you are your brain is infinitely malleable. You can develop, yes, and, you know, you can go from not being, you know, not thinking you're not good at talking to thinking, you know, to being great at talking, thinking you're not great at math to thinking, you know, you're amazing at math.
Exactly. Yeah. It's this whole idea that, right, if you believe, or if you believe, have a fixed mindset, you look at everything as a, you know, measuring stick, right? That being able to look at everything against a ruler and say, you know, there's a finite amount of ability. And once you hit a barrier, then you decide for yourself that that's the cap, right? So the example she uses, one of the things she talks about in the book, and I think she has a TED talk as well, which is super great. And only, I think, 20 minutes or something like that. But she talks about how this came up in terms of the research study she did, where she gave puzzles to a group of kids. And she told part of the group, you know, she told all the kids, oh, this is going to be super, super challenging. Like, this is a really hard puzzle. And about half of the group said, yeah, I don't even really want to start. They were freaked out by it. And they were like, no, I don't want to do the puzzle. No, thanks. Cause they had talked up how challenging it was. But then there was this other group who said, ooh, I'm so excited. And then they finished it and they said, can I have another? And so she was trying to figure out the difference between the two of them. And yeah, that's very much what it is fixed mindset thinks that you have a finite amount of ability. So for example, if you're doing great in math until you hit calculus, then you say, well, I guess calc was my limit. So beyond that, can't do it. But that until then, I'm comfortable. And a growth mindset acknowledges that when you hit those barriers, you can grow through them.
And it's crazy. It's crazy to me because it's like, these are like actual sort of thoughts that have gone through my head at one point. It's like, you're not good at sales. You're not good at cold calling. You're not good at math. Uh-huh. It's like, you had these beliefs and you just had to like, you had to gut through it.
Yeah.
And just like, just keep sort of pushing. As you were talking about the example of sort of the kids that, you know, with two different mindsets, it reminded me of, and I can't remember the exact example, but it was a study that was done and referenced in the book Thinking Fast and Slow. And mm-hmm. they talked about the, I'm pretty sure it was Thinking Fast and Slow. And they framed up, it was two groups of housekeepers. And in one, they suggested, so the one was the control, they said nothing. And the other, they suggested to the housekeepers that, or reminded them that the housekeeping work that they were doing was actually quite good exercise. Mm. And in the group that had, so out of the control group, they had control group stayed the same, but the group that was suggested that what they were doing was actually really good exercise, they'd lost something like 10% more weight than the control group.
How interesting.
And so it's like, if your mindset can have an impact on your physical body, and not just on how you sort of interact with the world and talk with others, but if it can have an impact on sort of weight loss, then there's such a huge spectrum of what this sort of mindset can touch with regards to your performance on a sales call.
Yeah. There's millions of applications. It affects, it is one of those things that affects everything. And before I understood it or learned much about it, it was kind of once I did learn, I felt like my world was being broken open because I was like, oh my gosh, this explains so much and it can do so much. So yeah, you are 100% correct on that.
Cool. Yeah. I'm going to take that little audio clip and just like play that anytime I'm right at the office. I'll have like one of those buttons, like with those easy buttons. And just like every time I'm right, I'm like, you were 100% correct on that.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to be, be that for you.
Yes. I don't hear it very often. So, you know.
Soak it in while you can. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've talked a little bit about sort of how they're formed, but like, why would we have developed these in the first place?
Yeah. I mean, I think, right. Again, some of these things are things you hear, but I think it's what's one thing that's really important to underline when it comes to beliefs are some are innocuous, some are advantageous even. Others are more problematic, but it tends to come back to if we see things, right? I want you to really come back to this idea of being a kid. I always explain it like kid math. Kids are great for a lot of things. They are wonderful and they're not always the most discerning, which is also how the Santa thing goes so long, right? And so they're not always the most discerning. And so for them to be able to, you know, sometimes they'll see something and they'll come to their own conclusions. And this is never the conclusion, or is rarely the conclusion that the adult wants them to draw from it. So I'll give you an example here, which is one of the big beliefs that I had to unpack and understand before I could start my business was I had a belief before I started that the only way to be successful was in corporate. And when I looked at, you know, what this was based in, a lot of it came back to I grew up with a dad who was in corporate and a mom who was self-employed. And it was so interesting because, you know, my parents would constantly say great stuff about my mom and how much work she was doing. But as a kid, you're always listening and perceptive and catching on to these little things. And I remember one time there was a vacation we went on, I think it was to Hawaii. And my dad said something along the lines of, oh, well, your mom just had such a great, you know, past couple months. And so it's paying for this vacation. And if, in his mind, it's meant as a compliment and a yay, mom, look at how well you're doing. And to me as a kid, I start scratching my head and I say, okay, so that means it doesn't pay for anything else, right? Right? And that's what happens. And he would be horrified and totally mortified if he knew that that's what I got from that statement. And if he knew that later, I took that to believe, well, you know, if you work for yourself, it's kind of just fun money, but everything else you have to be in corporate because that's the real job. That's the thing that really makes it happen.
Yeah.
And if they had known that something as small as that could make such a big impact, it would have never upset it, right? But it's so fascinating how you hear something like that and then you kind of pick up on a lot of little cues. And so you put it together and to make this Frankenstein of a concept that you then go about your life believing and believing and practicing into the world is true. So that's an example of how one was formed for me. But I think that's to answer your question of where they come from, right? That's really it. It's these things that are deep in the recesses and we pick them up because as when, you know, when we're young, we're always looking to the people around us for examples of what's true and what's not true. Cause that's how you figure out the world. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just miss the mark in terms of what you take to be true from what they said. And it's never what they're trying to instill in you.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing you said, you mentioned there was that, you know, sometimes they're, you know, benign and some or innocuous, and sometimes they can actually have a real impact. Mm-hmm. I think do you ever see cases where people are recognizing that they have some of these sort of like limiting beliefs? They know that they have them, but they're still having an impact on them?
Oh yeah, all the time. But I think I have never met a person who doesn't have some beliefs that are not advantageous to them. That's how I will put it. And I think some are more challenging than others, but the way you tend to find it, and this is one thing that I often talk through with clients, right, is the way you know that there's something going on tends to be when you have a recurring gap between ideal versus reality. So what I mean by that is you constantly say my ideal. So I want to be doing X, Y, and Z. My reality is very different. And once you have those recurring discrepancies, so whether it be, right, I always say that I want to leave the office at a reasonable hour and that I'm going to have better boundaries, but somehow I'm always there till 9:30 p.m. because people really need me, right? Or whatever it is, any of those gaps, that's normally how you know that there's something going on there that you should probably look at. Mm-hmm. And everyone has them in some way or another. So it can be a sales specific thing. It can be mindset when it comes to pretty much anything when it comes to work, life, right? These, and I will tell you right now, the themes will go back and forth, because if you're that person who doesn't know how to set boundaries at work, it's probably also hard for you to say no to driving 3 hours to go to this friend's birthday party for 20 minutes just because you feel like you have to, right? So, yeah, when it comes to, you know, where those technically come from and like why that kind of happens, that's what I would say.
Gotcha. Yeah, because it's interesting. Like in some cases, you know, we'll sort of cultivate them and keep them around because they're serving us in a positive way. Uh-huh. On the sort of flip side. Like if I go back to my cold calling example, you know, that having that belief that I sucked at cold calling was actually sort of protecting me. Is this wrapping me in this big blanket of, you know, I know I'm going to suck. I'm just going to go and I'm going to grind through this, and mm-hmm. it's going to help me get through this next, you know, 90-minute call block.
Oh, 100%. And I would argue that every single, right? So when we use the term limiting belief, a lot of people tend to really gravitate towards that phrasing. For me, I kind of talk about beliefs as a whole, because I think we're talking about ones that are, of course, can be limiting to you, but they're all there for a reason. And that's kind of why I hesitate to say that these are all bad, because they're not. You've kept it around this long because it served you in some way or another. So the belief that the only way to be successful was corporate, well, for a long time, it kept me really safe. It kept me on the corporate path. I was being successful in corporate. So it was putting me on the path and was getting me those accolades, and everyone was really proud of me. And it was also protecting, say, at kind of to your point earlier, right? It protects the ego. It protected me from ever having to go off of that path and being told that I shouldn't be doing that. So it served me in a very real way. And I would argue for anyone, if there's something that continues to recurringly happen in one of those patterns that we mentioned, and you're frustrated with it, look at where it's coming from and how it's helping you, because it is there for a reason, 100%.
Hmm. It reminds me of the way I think Carl Jung looks at the, I can't remember, it came out of the book King, Lover, Warrior, Magician, if I got that right. And he talked about how there's the king and then there's the shadow archetype, which is like the like angry prince or something like that. And so it's like, it's two sides of the same coin. It's this belief, it's this action that, okay, I'm gonna run through any wall I possibly can. Right. Mm. And that's gonna, you know, or like if for me personally, like I can be very stubborn, which I think if anybody from the company's listening, they're laughing their heads off at that comment. But that served me really, really well in the, you know, when we were starting the company, you know, when I was sucking at cold calling, you know, in the face of failure, that sort of stubbornness of like, it's going to be okay. I'll just sort of keep through it, keep persevering. That served me super well. But in other cases when I need to be, you know, when I'm maybe dealing with people, and I'm dealing with like personal issues, or I'm dealing with like trying to change and evolve the company, that same sort of stubbornness can hold me back in some ways. So what you're saying is like the belief there is not necessarily bad. It's just maybe the lack of knowledge of it, or sort of how to work around that is.
Yeah. And I think that the problem comes when it's driving the car, right? That it's not necessarily problematic in whole, but if you're noticing that it's causing you to do problematic things, then it isn't serving you. And so then you can start to look at it and say, okay, what's a healthier way I want to look at this? And that's what I would always suggest people do, right? It's not about saying, because sometimes you see the overswing of the pendulum. So what I mean by that is some people will say, well, I, you know, believe that this is the only way to be successful. So instead, I'm going to go too far in the other direction and just kind of start saying the opposite.
I'm like, first of all, you've overcorrected.
Yeah, you don't believe it. So that's not going to ever work. And it's never going to actually stick in any way. But also, right, yeah, the overcorrection, we do not want to see that. So I think that's really important to keep in mind as well, that you're not going too far in the opposite direction by any means.
That's fair. We don't want to just, I shouldn't suddenly just throw my hands up in the air and say, fine, I'm never going to be stubborn anymore. Anything goes.
Yeah. Or yeah, exactly. And you can't just power through and be like, well, I'm just the best at cold calls, and just say something that no part of you believes, because that's not helping you. And that's, unfortunately, I think what I see a lot of people want to do is they're like, okay, so I want to be able to identify, once they kind of are able to pinpoint, oh, well, here are some of these things that I'm believing or operating under the assumption is true, and it's maybe not serving me the best. They kind of just want to get there to that step and then wipe their hands of it and be like, so I don't believe that anymore, right? Mm-hmm. You can't just will things away. Otherwise, we would all be super well-adjusted and all of these things, and no one would go to therapy, which I think maybe everyone should probably be doing. So anyways, point is, I'm like, you can't just will something away like that. It doesn't really work that way.
It reminds me, it's funny, as you're saying that, it reminds me of like a lot of the early sales literature that I'd read. It was like, if you just think that you're good at cold calling, you'll be good at cold calling. And then like put a mirror in front of your phone and smile, or like put a pen in your mouth. And like, I vividly remember just hating the dials, or like being like terrified to jump on a really big call.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I guess I'll just like stare into this mirror and be like, don't smile. And that would actually make me smile. And it sort of like forces your body to kind of get there. But just the whole like, okay, well, if you suck at cold calling, just tell yourself you don't suck at cold calling.
Uh-huh. Well, and it's very interesting, because right now in the development world, there's starting to be more of a conversation around this idea of toxic positivity. And so what that can be is exactly this, right? When people just say the opposite, or they think they're like, I don't care, I'm going to just put on a happy face and it's going to be great. And it's Stepfordy or something in some way, where you're like, this is alarming behavior. I can tell that something weird is going on below the surface. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work super well. And it's really problematic, right? Telling people, oh, well, you just have to believe otherwise. Like, that can be such a flippant response. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important to remember as well, is like, I think that's becoming more of a conversation. I'm glad it is, because I think people are realizing you can't just say, oh, well, that's not the case.
Yeah.
And leave it at that.
Your brain isn't a config file that you can just like right click and open and be like, I'm just going to change a couple parameters here. Then I'll save that and go back and we're good.
Yeah.
Which I feel like was a lot of the training I got. It was like, okay, you know, I read like the Brian Tracy and the Jeffrey Gittimer stuff. I'm not saying bad things about them, but I think there were certain things from those programs in the early days that was like, okay, well, just, you know, think differently. It's like, okay, well, that's, I mean, obviously there was some of it that served you. So, you know, it served me well, because it got me going, and like, you know, I got making those calls. But I'm wondering if there's somebody on the sort of in a similar situation where they're newer in their career right now, and they sort of have this belief around, they're not great at cold calling, they're trying to learn, trying to like get over the hump of, you know, getting, you know, enough hours in to actually get comfortable on the phone and to realize it's about the systems. What advice would you give them, or how would you coach them to look at that situation? If it's not just you suck at cold calling now, just think that you don't suck and everything will be okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think if that's something, right, if that belief in particular is coming up with them, I would encourage them to look at, you know, what you always want to do is start by looking at, okay, what is this belief? What kind of things have I heard that have led me to believe that that's true? So you kind of want to look at that proof that we mentioned at the beginning of, that's how these things are formed. Well, what kind of proof do I have, right? What are the things that I have heard or seen or been told? And it's so funny, because I think this is one of those steps that people don't want to necessarily do, in terms of they say it's really going to be hard. So they're like, I don't know, I'm not going to be able to think of any of these. And I can tell you, just from the number of times I've been on calls with clients where I'm like, tell me where, you know, can we talk about what is some of the proof that you've seen behind this? And they start by saying, I don't know. And then once I give them, you know, 30 seconds of silence, they're like, well, in the second grade. I'm like, okay, exactly. Like, it's amazing the things that you have buried in your memory. So I think it's important to look at what's kind of behind it. And then, to your point, right, what is the advantage of me keeping it around? Why have I kept it around so long? So you can look at why it hasn't been helping you and why it has. But these are really the steps I walk clients through with any sort of belief that's coming up and impacting their career in a way that's not advantageous to them. Looking at, you know, what's it based in? Why am I even keeping it here? you know, how does it serve me? How does it not serve me? And what's a healthier way to look at it, right? Which, what's a kind of new belief that I believe in my gut and I believe in concept, but I don't always act as if that's true? Because that's what you want to replace it with, not this opposite. I'm just going to say the opposite and that's going to be great. Because as we said, that can be a little toxic positivity and not so useful.
Well, you don't believe it.
You're exactly. And you don't buy it.
Bullshit. And so now you're pissed off at yourself in your brain.
Yeah. So instead it has to be something that you conceptually buy, but you just don't always act as if that's the case. So maybe it's something about like, well, conceptually I know that, you know, I'm new at doing these calls and they can be challenging, but like, I know maybe one thing that I do totally buy is you get better, but the best way to get better at doing these calls is by doing a lot of them. Right. So like, maybe that's something that is a more healthy way that I conceptually buy and I know is true. And I just need to continue to remind myself of that instead of I can't do this. Maybe my new reminder to myself will be, well, I know the best way to get better at these calls is by having a lot of them. So here we go. My next one is going to be another way for me to add a tick on that and move me closer to feeling like I'm really equipped to do these.
Interesting. I feel like I've learned so much in the last, like since starting the company, I've learned so much in the last 7-8 years. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. It's almost like climbing a mountain. Like the first time I had to learn something new like this, it was like staring at this like face of a mountain. I'm like, how the fuck am I going to climb this thing? Like, I don't know how to do any of this. And like, I'm not trying to brag that I've learned so much, but I've had so many opportunities to look, to stand at the bottom of the mountain going, oh, this again. Okay, great. And it's interesting that I've done it so many times now that I'm like, I just look at it. I'm like, oh yeah, it's a mountain. I'm like, we'll find a way to the top. Like I might not know how to climb this mountain, but we'll figure it out. And so like the more that I've gone through this process of doing really hard things, the easier getting, doing new things has gotten for me.
100%. Yeah. Because you've gotten recurring exposure to the fact that I can do hard things and I can overcome things that feel insurmountable. But I know because I've practiced that experience before. You're totally right. It's like when you're, you know, as a kid, when you learned to ride a bike, it felt a lot more challenging. Now you don't think about it because you've had to learn things before in that same way. So totally agree with you on that.
And it's interesting to the point that you had before there. I started to distract. I just felt like I need to talk about mountains for a little bit. You know,
I live in Colorado, so.
Cool.
Always talk about mountains here.
Vancouver here. I got the mountains right behind me here.
Oh yeah.
Where are your mountains? Come on, Chris.
Well.
On the wall.
Right that way. We do have a bunch of mountains on the wall behind me, but no.
Cool. Awesome. One of the things you sort of alluded to is it's not just about unpacking the sort of, I guess I won't call them limiting beliefs, but the sort of beliefs and sort of where they come from. It's not just about understanding where they came from. It's understanding sort of why you kept them around, how they served you. Mm-hmm. But it's not good enough just to sort of get the history of them. Like you mentioned that we have to sort of do things to rewire the brain. So can you talk a little bit about how we do that? And obviously we're not in a coaching session and we can't have this conversation with, you know, thousands of people at one time and just say, okay, let's open up some things that we're not going to be able to sort of fix and close because this is a podcast. We can only get so deep.
Right.
Can't have a personal conversation with everybody.
Right.
But can we talk about like, maybe let's go back to this cold calling case. We've unpacked that. Okay. I think I'm not great at cold calling. And I know why it served me. It's been this security blanket. So how do I go about rewiring that belief?
So when it comes to, you know, once you've been able to fully understand where it comes from and why, then you can try and come up with these, right? What are the healthier ways that I want to look at them, as we talked about, that speak to the reasons that I've kept it around, that speak to all of those things. So it's hard without going too far into kind of other examples. But I think what I would say is we want to come up with kind of what are these new beliefs? What are the healthier ways I want to look at them? So just using that one of, well, I know with continued, you know, exposure to calls, that's how I get better to them. Like we'll just use that as our example here. Then what you want to do is be able to add more proof to that one, right? So there's the whole field of neuroplasticity is really interesting because neuroplasticity talks about how the brain is malleable. And for a long time, right, people thought that it wasn't. And scientists are now learning more about the fact that like you can learn new things and you can teach an old dog new tricks. And a lot of how you do that is, you know, there's tons of great videos you can find online and courses about it, but you want to, I would say, like, if you think of your brain like a balance sheet, if you have a lot of proof for this other thing and you have this new belief that you're trying to put in its place, then you want to add more proof to this kind of new, healthier way to look at it. So how can I add proof to, you know, what kind of examples can I think of that are proof to this? Well, the best way to get better at calls is by doing a lot of them. Well, maybe I can look at examples of, you know, people who have built really successful businesses who maybe they started by doing that. Or maybe I can look at examples of people I know. So my peer did this and, you know, they were struggling with calls when they first started and now they're great at them. Maybe I can look at personal examples. So I did a hell of a lot better on my fifth call than I did on my first, right? What kind of examples, what kind of proof can you add to this new belief? Because that's how you want to, essentially you just want to move the weight in the side of the balance sheet that you want to support, right? If you want to believe that new thing, then work on adding more proof to that and strengthening that one. And it's almost like, this is a very meathead example, but I tend to use it just because I think it's like the best way I can articulate it of, if you find out you've been doing squats wrong your whole life, and so you're like, oh, I'm using this wrong muscle. Well, you don't just, right? As Carol Dweck actually says in Mindset, the New Psychology of Success, she says replacing mindset isn't like replacing a hip. You don't just like snap your fingers and it's done. And you're like, okay, new mindset now, like new beliefs. Mm-hmm. Same kind of thing here, but it's about strengthening that other muscle so that over time it starts correcting for the one that you've been using that maybe isn't so good. This is like physical therapy 101.
I was just going to say, it sounds like physiotherapy for the mind. It's like, you've realized, hey, this, like my shoulder hurts here. It's like, okay, well, I have to do these stretches. Yeah. I have to do these exercises. I've got these bands and it's not just one thing that I can just decide, okay, I don't want my shoulder to hurt. I have to follow through and reinforce and reinforce and reinforce and put it into practice. And then when I get back and I jump into the pool to go swimming, then I have to correct my technique. And so it's not just about the technique. It's about the supporting muscles and all of that.
Yeah.
Which is just, right?
Well, it's 100%. And I think, right, it's that kind of thing where, it takes time and the reinforcement is the most important part because over time it gets so easy. You know, now a lot of the things that were originally, you know, the only way to be successful is corporate. That doesn't come up for me anymore. But when you're first trying to do to kind of convince yourself or train your brain to believe otherwise, what always happens, and I say this because I've seen it both for myself, but I see it with clients all the time, is you tend to see things or get triggered in certain ways of someone says something that's trying to kind of call back that old belief that you're trying to break up with. And so you start to go like, oh yeah, maybe they are right. And you have to be able to catch yourself and kind of slap your hand and realize, wait, maybe, or maybe I also know that I can do a lot of calls and I'll get better at them, right? So you have to kind of think about what you want to replace it with and be mindful enough to catch yourself because it gets way easier over time. But to your point, at first, it is quite challenging to train yourself and like do the work so that you can actually shift some of these things.
It sounds like, to use a sales example, because we talk about, you know, when you're trying to prospect into somebody, you know, one of the easier ways to get in is to look for like a trigger event, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you've got a new CMO and statistically they're going to spend X thousand dollars as soon as a new CMO is hired. And so you look for that trigger event in one of your, you know, target accounts. And then that makes it easier for you to sort of get in the door because, you know, this messaging is going to resonate.
Yeah.
In the same way, you're sort of looking for these like trigger events in your life where you're like, okay, when this happens, I know I typically respond this way.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sort of what you're suggesting?
Yeah. And I think I also think it's important to remember too, some of those triggers in terms of a lot of these things, as we talked about, right, are things that you've heard growing up. And so a big thing that I see with my clients is as they're working on this stuff, one interesting dynamic that tends to happen is because I primarily work with millennials. And so a lot of them still have their parents around and can talk to them about stuff. And a lot of them will have, you know, a week or so where they hop on a call and they're like, oh my gosh, I was making such good progress. And then my parents said this thing, because of course we know what their parents believe, because that's what they said in the first place. And you have to remember that beliefs are like passed down and passed down and passed down and passed down. Mm. And so their parents will say something that will then make them say like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remind myself that it's not true, but it's hard not to go there. And I think the thing I will always remind my clients there is it's important to look at it with a lot of empathy, because of course, I think it's really important to remember that parents aren't telling you things because they're trying to give you limiting beliefs or any of this. And they probably don't even know what you're talking about if you were to have this conversation with them. Mm-hmm. So instead, I think it's important to remember that there's no ill intent behind it, but they're just going to say things because that's what they believe. And that's what happens is, you know, no one is typically going around saying stuff to try and make you feel or do a certain thing or feel a certain way, right? It's more about they're going and they're sharing their beliefs. And if a part of you believes it's true, you're going to latch on to that. Mm-hmm. But if no part of you believes it's true, it's going to kind of fall on deaf ears. So now if people say to me, the only way to be successful is corporate, and I kind of, I'm just like, in my mind, I'm just like, oh yeah, that's obviously what you've heard. And that's kind of it. It doesn't do anything to me anymore. It's not a visceral response as maybe it once was.
Yeah.
And so I think it's just important to remember, right? Some of those triggers might be conversations with the people who taught you that in the first place, which again, not ill intention, but just be aware to kind of look out for other things that might call back some of that proof that you had in the first place.
That's fair. Because there really is no such thing as perfect communication, where I say one thing and it's received exactly as intended on the other side.
No.
we dove into this, and I wish I knew the podcast number, but we're over 120 now. And a limiting belief I have about myself is that I'm not going to remember all of these. And so I believe that. And then I'm not disappointed when I don't believe that. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the numbers for all 120 episodes. But
it's
we had Mark.
Track of.
It is a lot. Yeah. We had Mark Kosoglaw on. He's the, I think, VP of sales, or maybe a bit higher now, over at Outreach. And we talked about in discovery, like when we're talking with customers or prospects, that, you know, how we're sending messages, you know, doesn't always, what we're sending doesn't always get received. And he talked about this interesting way of making sure we're avoiding that. And it makes a ton of sense in the context of a sales call. But when you're just hearing things about yourself as your kid and your brain isn't even fully formed, there's no way that you can even, like, we can even hope to have even anything close to perfect communication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. There's no discernment. Yeah. You just take it through and then you parrot it back out, which is also sometimes, I can say, the funniest things, because you just hear them say exactly what their parents said. And you're like, yeah, you've heard that before, haven't you? So that's how it happens.
I wonder where that came from.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right on. Chris, I've really enjoyed our conversation here. I'm wondering if we're thinking about resources for the future. You talked about a video on neuroplasticity. Is there anything top of mind that comes to if people want to?
There is there's like a 2-minute YouTube one. And I think I can send you the link of where it's from if you want to link it in show notes or anything like that. But there's just like a short one that I found. But if you just honestly take a search of neuroplasticity on YouTube, there's tons of videos where you can learn a little bit more about it.
Cool. I almost had to Google how to spell it, but I'll put it in the show notes, because I typed it into Google Sheets or Google Docs, and it didn't correct me. So I think I got it right.
But yeah, that is correct.
Perfect. I will, when Chris sends me the link, I'll throw that in the show notes. I'll see if I can track down the thinking fast and slow housekeeper example that I found. I've got a video of Carol Dweck's Mindset TED Talk. And then there was something earlier that I didn't get quite into, but we kind of alluded to, but there's a book by Joe Navarro called What Everybody Is Saying. And, you know, we talked about in the very beginning of the episode about how what we believe can sort of present itself physically and on the calls. If you don't believe me there, like, check out Chris's book. He was I think FBI interrogator, negotiator.
Oh, wow.
Interrogator. And he talked about just how to pick up on the visual signals that people are telling you. As a salesperson, that book has had a huge help in understanding, especially with Zoom. And, you know, now we're on Zoom and running the podcast. I can see when guests are like, yeah, this makes sense. Or I can mm-hmm. see the blank stares where you're like, Colin, I wish you would just stop talking. And so I'm a big fan of that book. Definitely recommend. So Carol Dweck is definitely one. I think you alluded to Angela Duckworth's Grit a little bit earlier. Any other books you recommend people that are thinking, I want to harden my mindset, I want to check, you know, for them to check out?
I think starting there is a great place to work, a great place to begin, to be honest. I mean, there are tons of resources on mindset. You can find endless books about different mindset when it comes to different things. I'm sure there's books on sales mindset. I know there's books on financial mindset, money mindset. There are books on everything. So I think what's important is just, if you want to start diving into it, I think Carol Dweck's a great place to start, because she's only talking about mindset in terms of growth versus fixed and looking at those two, that kind of like dichotomy individually. But you can find, yeah, endless resources on mindset as a whole.
Cool.
Yeah.
Right on. Well, Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. Before we wrap, I just want to know, normally we do a cold call role play, but I thought, you know, as a coach, you're not doing too much cold calling. So we didn't want to put you through the ringer.
Yeah.
But can you just give us just tell us a little bit about how you the people that you typically help and what you do to help them?
Yeah. So I primarily work with millennial women, and pretty much everything we do over at Empowered Achievers is focused on helping them to build more fulfilling careers that they love. So whether that be, you know, helping a woman within corporate who is looking for something that's a bit more fulfilling, right? Maybe she's been in her career for a while, but she's realizing, this is something that I fell into, or this is something that I've been doing since college, but I don't know that this is actually what I want to do forever. Mm-hmm. That's primarily who I work with, because that's who I was when I was in advertising. So the reason I created the business, as for many people, was it was the thing that I wish I had had. So either helping them in corporate, or helping them women who are in corporate but looking to start their own side hustle to get more fulfillment outside of work in that way. But yeah, both of those ways, doing individual and group coaching and stuff like that to help them to identify some of this stuff. Like, what are the things that I'm thinking about work that maybe aren't so helpful? What do I actually want? And help them to take the shoulds out of their career, because that typically doesn't do many of us favors.
Totally fair. And if people are trying to get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Yeah, you can find me on social at Empowered Achievers. My website is Be Empowered Achievers, BE Empowered Achievers. And I'm pretty easy to track down. Chris Castillo, Empowered Achievers, any of those things will probably direct you to me.
Very cool. And if you're looking for, if you're not quite convinced and you want to look at a bit of a case study of Chris's work, we had Caitlin Buckheit on the show. I think you've been working with Caitlin, and she had mentioned you two have been working together for some time.
Yeah.
And in the episode, you can actually sort of see her sort of how she outlines how she worked through some of those things. She presented a really interesting sort of tactical, how she's done it herself and how she has taken what she've learned from you and is sort of instilling that in the people that she's coaching. Yeah. So if you don't quite believe me that Chris is awesome, go check out episode 117 with Caitlin. You can see the proof for yourself. And if you already believe, then hit her up at beempoweredachievers.com.
Mm-hmm.
Right on. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Chris.
Yeah, thank you for having me.